Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson, and this is episode 277. And my guest today is Jay from the United States. And Jay has rather a long dream. Well, actually, it's a very long dream. She said to me after we finished the recording, which was just now, I didn't realize how long that dream was. Thankfully, she tells the dream really well. You'll be in there with all the drama. And I love the fact, you know, we've done dreams that are very short. We've done medium size. We've done long ones and we've done very long ones. But one of the things you'll particularly notice about when we interpret and explore this dream is that because it's a long dream, we look for and we see recurring themes. We look for recurrences. So as you're listening to Jay tell her dream, see if you can notice as she's speaking where similar themes keep coming up, where similar symbols keep coming up. So you can begin to do the detective work as you're listening. Now, as you know, if you're a long-term listener of The Dream Show, and as you won't know if you've never listened before, when we have a guest on the show, I don't know anything about the dream before we start recording. We've just done that recording, which is why I now know about the dream, but you get the experience of listening to the dream at the same time as I do, and of hearing how I then help the dreamer to explore the dream and how we work together to interpret the dream and to work out a dream alchemy and to compare or discover insight about the dreamer's life through the dream to draw parallels with their life. So it's a whole new journey you're in for. Shortly before we go there, just reminding you of the website links. My website, janeteresa.com. That's Teresa without an H. That's where you go to find out, to read hundreds of blogs about dreams and dreaming, to join our newsletter so you get regularly contacted by me, to listen to every episode of The Dream Show that's ever been, or to find out about how to consult me about your dreams. And there's also the Dream Academy, and the address for that is dream-academy-online.com, which is my learning platform where you can go to do courses in how to interpret your dreams, dream alchemy, dream therapy that you do in your own time, in your own space, at home, video led by me with lots of notes, etc., etc. So those are the two main places to go to, or on social media, Facebook and Instagram. So without further ado, let's get on with Jay's dream. Welcome to The Dream Show, Jay.
Hi, how are you?
I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
I am good. Thank you for asking.
We, of course, are in Australia and you're in the US. So we're at the beginning of our day. You're at the end of yours. Have you got lots of energy for what's coming up?
Yes, I do. I'm really excited to hear your feedback.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you. Well, as always, I have no idea what dream you're bringing to the show. So would you like to, I think you've probably got it in front of you. Would you like to read it out?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So the dream begins with me seeing my cousin Ree walking across the street with her two young daughters, and I ask her where she is going. She says she is going to take her kids to their grandparents' house. I either want something to do or just to be included, so I ask her if she wants me to take them. She agrees. We get to the place where we grew up, where both of our grandparents live. They're in separate houses, but it's down that road. Her brother, Al, is now with us in the car. Ree goes inside, which is actually, she goes inside one of my cousin's house, and we can hear yelling between her and the children's granddad. I unbuckle the kids so they can move around and play outside if they want, but they stay in the car. I'm talking to Ree's brother, Al, and everything is cordial. I ask him why Ree can't get money from the guy who she was sleeping around with during her marriage. And he said he did give her money but stopped because she's not putting out, which putting out means having sex regularly with him. Mm-hmm. So Al seems fed up after listening to the argument and says he's going in. I tell him he's driving because I'm realizing at this point I don't really want to be part of this. We are driving, which seems like the short distance between our grandmother's house, and we see his cousin Brian in the rearview mirror holding what seems to be the kids' toys. Al blows up on me and says, why wasn't I watching the kids? I told him I was, but didn't see any toys because they didn't even leave the car. He responds by saying I would have seen the toys had I been watching them better. I am shocked at his anger. We drive back to Brian, and instead of toys, we see that there is a note that says, "Do not plagiarize." I am a bit relieved thinking that because it wasn't toys, Al will see he's wrong and that I was watching the kids all along, but he seems upset. We go into my grandmother's house, which is my childhood home, and at some point reappears, and I guess the granddad has decided not to give her any money, so she decides to take his wallet from a cup that is sitting on the table. He appears and seems to know his wallet was stolen, and he threatens that if she leaves with it, he will call the cops. We leave, and on the way down the steps, there's this big, weird-looking dog. I think it was called a Christmas dog. I don't know where that came from. That smells everyone, but leaves them alone. When he gets to me, he starts harassing me and low-key trying to bite me. I don't know if he is deformed, but he is snapping his neck back on my hand and causing me pain. No one is coming to my aid. I am finally able to brush him off, and I close the car door quickly to escape him. I'm guessing Ree is driving now because we come to the stop sign and we see two white Bentleys with the big letter B emblazoned across the nameplate. One is coming from the left and turns onto the street we are on. We look and see they are coming from this funeral home. Al asks if the B stands for the funeral home or the Bentley. I say, it must be the Bentley, but they are using the B to be associated with the funeral home. We are now on the side of the street. We're parked on the side of the street. And Ree says she is going to rob the store. I don't know if the funeral home changed from a store, if the store is already there beside the funeral home. But the place seems to have a lot of money. She gets out of the car with a gun. He's now there, and he gets out and has his phone. Al gets out, but I'm not sure what device he has. My cousin Jan is now clearly there as well and has a gun that she's just looking goofy and clumsy and giddy to have. Ree starts shooting random people on the street. She even starts, like, spraying them. Then she shoots directly at the windshield where her two daughters are seated in the front seat watching all of this. The bullet enters the shield in front of her oldest daughter, and I can tell she is terrified, but shockingly, the shield doesn't break and the bullet doesn't hit her. I am crouched down in the back seat trying to avoid being hit by a random bullet. Ree gets back in the car afterwards, and she is seated in the back seat with me. I hear the air coming out of one of the back tires and realize that it had gotten hit in the crossfire, so we can't leave. Ree seems to be resigned to not leaving and that this trip is over. My dad calls me after seeing a video on Facebook of Ree or my car, and he asks me if that is her. I tell him yes, and I'm trying to explain the story. I get out of the car, and I'm walking behind the car towards some bystanders, and they've witnessed all this. And one of the guys says something about how I wasn't part of the shooting because I stayed in the car. I see a police officer who I'm unsure if he's going to stop me or arrest me, but he lets me walk past. I walk into some house, and I am on the phone with my mother explaining what happened, and I see my aunt who recently passed, who is also the grandmother of Ree and Al. I think she has on this all-white church usher uniform. She says something in her sing-songy voice that is unmistakable. I immediately know she is not supposed to be there, so I turn around and walk back outside. I ask my mother, did she hear that? And she says, no, so I'm assuming I saw my aunt's ghost. I don't get to finish explaining my story to her because I am back near the car and I see a police officer at the car and I know my cousins have been arrested. Some of my family are there with the kids. The officer asks where the kids should go, and I say something about my aunt's house, which is their grandmother, and one of my cousins gets upset with me because with everyone going to jail, she knows she will be primarily responsible for watching the kids. She says something to me, and I ask her in front of everyone, do you want the kids to go to their grandmother's house or with me? And she seems to be stumped. My older cousin says something like, she's just being lazy, don't pay her any mind, don't listen to her. And at first, I'm thinking she's talking about me because I would assume her and my cousin would be closer. But then I hear myself saying I'm not, and it's obvious by how upset my cousin is that it, like her aunt is on her side. My mother is now there with me and mentions my car needing to go to the shop because of the flat tire and the bullets. The fire truck arrived, and there's also a big bus that all of the kids are on. I ask my mother, where is the bus taking them? And she says to my aunt's house where they can all get something to eat. Reed's sister is now there with her brother and sister gone to jail. I expected her to be shocked or visibly upset, but she seems cool and calm. She says something to my mother, but she doesn't acknowledge me. I keep wondering about how Reed is holding up and feeling in jail all alone. So me, my mom, and all of my cousins, we're now seated together in a small room, and on the other side of the door are the kids eating, because I remember we opened it up to see what they were all up to. One of my cousins is talking to my mother about something. I asked this cousin if her husband and daughter had made it back from California, and she says they just got back today. I am with Al in my grandmother's room, back at her house, and he says something crazy to me, and then he locks his arms around me in a grip and says that what he is saying is the truth and he won't let me go. I'm thinking Brian will vouch for me, but instead he says Al is telling the truth. I am so saddened by all of this and feel that no one will believe me, but after a moment, Brian breaks down and says he can't do it and that I'm telling the truth. My mother doesn't really react. My cousin, who is Ree's sister, is holding the same, there's this gun that the chiropractor uses on my neck. She's holding that, and she lets it go on my neck, and I'm immediately annoyed and brush her away from me. Al cries out to God for help. I wake up relieved that this is a dream.
Wow, that's a huge long dream, Jay. That's and very dramatic. And did you wake up feeling quite drained after all of that?
Yeah. I just woke up relieved that, like, you know, after he cried out for help, somehow I woke up and was just like, oh, it's a dream. So I can't remember exactly how I processed it afterwards, but I just was just happy it was not real.
Yes, yeah. And that that chiropractic gun that the chiropractor normally uses on you, does the chiropractor use that on your neck usually or on other parts of your body?
It's on the neck. I think sometimes there may be on the back, like along the spinal area, but it's mostly on the neck when she senses like any tension there.
Yes. So that's for tension. I just noticed that because the dog earlier in the dream, the dog it got you on the hand, but wasn't there something about the neck there that was snapping you on the neck?
Yeah, I still am trying to figure out what he was doing, because I recorded this dream, according to my notes, I recorded this dream at 5:16 a.m. Like I woke up in the middle of the night. And what I wrote down was, when he gets to me, he starts harassing me and low-key trying to bite me. I don't know if he's deformed, but he is snapping his neck hand.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
His neck on my hand.
Yeah. And when you thought, you know, I don't know if he's deformed, was that because of his ability to move his neck in a strange, undog-like way?
I think it's because of the way he looked, like kind of like a mangy looking dog that hadn't eaten in a while. That's what I meant by deformed. Like he just was not healthy and full, you know, kind of like undernourished in some way.
Undernourished, yeah. It's just it's a long dream and we're going to get into it and I'll be asking you some specific questions. But, okay. You know, there's so much that's happening there. And often when there's an animal in a dream, now we can never always say, well, you know what, this symbol means this or this symbol means that. Every symbol is personal to a dreamer. But often when there's an animal in a dream, it can represent an instinct or a feeling that you've got that is just beginning to surface. You know, we have people in our dreams often to represent things we kind of know about, our issues and our emotions and our beliefs. But animals will often represent more of a kind of animal energy or something more primal that we're just sort of beginning to, or maybe not quite beginning to, grapple with. And although a dog is a kind of borderline wild animal, because it's actually a domesticated animal, your dog wasn't completely domesticated. I mean, it was a bit wild, it was going for you. So there can be a sense that an animal in a dream can represent an energy that you're feeling within you, either consciously or unconsciously, that you're just beginning to sort of come up to recognize. So we've got that dog there. And as you say, it wasn't so much deformed. You're wondering if it's undernourished, not really getting what it needs. And it's able to snap its neck in an odd kind of way that actually injures you. And I'm putting that together with the fact that you go to the chiropractor to get treatment for your neck, which is often injured or needing to be released because of tension and stress. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before we go into everything else, there's something there I feel about whether your neck issues in waking life are caused from stress of the physicality of your position, you know, where you work or how you work or anything like that, or whether the neck issues are caused from emotional issues that cause you to really, like, I'm really trying to stand stiff and straight here, you know, or not bend into something. I don't know, but there's something there that I feel this dream is one of the main things that this dream is processing. Whatever it is in life that is causing you difficulties with your neck that cause you to go to the chiropractor to get all that release is I think one of the main issues that the dream is processing. Yeah, and so you see that dog is particularly maybe undernourished. Would you, and there's also, if you just hold that thought of undernourished, there's also a kind of running theme through the dream, through the very complicated dream, Jay, of the kids. Who's going to look after the kids? Are the kids in trouble? Where are the kids going to go? Are the kids going to be okay? How much in danger are the kids? There's this, you know, and one point actually a reference to the kids feeding. You know, you're in the grandparents' house and you open up so that you can see into a room to check how the kids are going with their eating, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mm. So there's a kind of reference there to nourishment. Are the kids getting nourished? Are the kids well? Now, the thing about looking at a dream is that we really look at everybody and everything in the dream as representing something about ourselves. So there's the feeling here that you've got all these kids, and one of the key concerns through this dream is, are the kids going to be okay? We'll come to re later, because that was another concern. Are the kids going to be okay? So it's like there's maybe a part of yourself that you're thinking, am I nourished okay? Now, we're not really talking food, although we might be talking food. We're really talking other kinds of nourishment, you know, emotional nourishment, spiritual nourishment, whatever nourishment means to you. It's as if there's parts of yourself that might otherwise be childlike and playful and full of wonderment and needing to be looked after are actually feeling undernourished. And this is really getting you in the neck and, you know, with that dog energy really hurting your hand. And we use our hands to deal with things in the world. And on that same note, I think there was a reference somewhere when you were talking about the dream to, I'm on my own here. Nobody's here to help me. So would you say that at the time of your dream, which was when, Jay? When was your dream?
This was almost exactly a month to the day.
Okay, so it's probably going to be a bit hard to think back a month to the day, but the dreams are usually processing the immediate 1 to 2 days before the dream and then comparing that to your whole life. So if you can think back that far, or it may be an ongoing issue, Jay, is there a feeling that's coming up for you of, yes, maybe I am a bit undernourished in some area of my life, emotionally, spiritually, physically, whatever?
Yes.
Yes. Could that, do you have a kind of innate sense that that might be affecting your stress and tension and your neck?
I definitely think so.
Mm-hmm.
I am... aware that at least if it's not the direct cause of, you know, the pain that I, the neck pain that I have that is somehow exacerbating it.
Yes. So one of the wonderful outcomes that we might hope for in exploring your dream is if we can find the deeper cause that is, as you say, maybe exasperating the neck pain, then that, together with the help that you're getting from your chiropractor and people, might actually begin to reduce and relieve and take away that neck pain altogether. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, just, it's not related to the immediately to the dream, but what is the neck used for?
You mean on the body?
Yeah, just your gut response to that. What is the neck used for?
Holding up the head.
Yes.
Aligning the body.
Yes. Different people would answer different things. I thought you were going to say that holding your head. Often people would say holding your head high, but holding your head. So there's a sense here of, you know, when you're talking to someone about their dream, as I'm doing with you, Jay, the unconscious mind will often be quick to supply answers that your conscious mind might not otherwise do. So your unconscious mind is telling us that it's probable that the neck thing that you're having in life and the underlying neck issues that this dream is exploring are to do with the strain and the tension of holding your head high, not just physically, but what does it mean to hold your head high in the world? It means to be confident. What else does holding your head high mean, or holding your head up to you?
It means going after what, confidence is one of the things, but going after what you want, making your own decisions, and standing firmly in those decisions, whatever it is.
Yes. And doing all those things, being confident, going after what you want and standing firmly in your position, when you're trying those out for the first time, can result in that stiff neck. This is hard work. I'm out there doing those things, but it's really hard work for me. Or I would like to be able to do those things, but it's too hard for me. The tension's too hard. I sense it's the former, like I'm going to go and stand up for myself and be confident and do these things. But deep down inside, I'm not so confident. There are reasons why I don't stand up for myself, which I'm trying to overcome in waking life by just doing it. And it's causing all this tension in my neck. Does that ring a bell?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it would be probably more the second one, though.
Holding back.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. So if we look through the dream knowing with all that in mind, there are many points in the dream where you're asking questions or you're not sure about stepping out, literally stepping in and out of the car as well. So we might explore some of those in a minute to get more clarity on that as to why you are holding back on being able to hold your head high and have that confidence because of other issues. Now, you mentioned that you were your childhood home was your grandparents' home. So you were you brought up by your grandparents?
Yes, for the most part. I don't know how much information you want.
No, only what you're prepared to give, because this is the dream show and people are listening.
I was raised probably the first 5-6 years of my life solely by my grandmother, and then I was adopted.
So you were adopted out of the home?
Within the family.
Within the family.
Yeah, but my birth mother, I did not care for me.
Okay. Right. So did you say you were about 5 or 6 when you were adopted out, or did I imagine that?
Yes.
You were 5 or 6. And I've probably programmed the question now, so I didn't really mean to do that. But with those kids early on in the dream, what kind of age were they? Were they there the age that they are in real life, or were they a different age? The age they are in. And roughly what age is that they are, Ree's kids, at the beginning?
I would say 4 and 5.
Right. So they're just a little bit younger in waking life now than you were when you were adopted out.
Yes. And I'm actually guesstimating the age I was when I was adopted.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure it was a little bit younger than that.
Yeah. So even though Ree's kids are about the age that you may have been adopted out, or you may have heard or felt it coming, you know, conversations about it. Sometimes in waking life, when we notice, sometimes we notice our own children or other people's children, you know, children close to us, when they reach an age which was pertinent for us or painful for us, we can begin to look at them in a different way, even sometimes unconsciously, and they can certainly enter our dreams to sometimes represent myself, Jay, when I was 4 or 5 years old. So all that concern running through the dream about the kids and what to do with them now seems to have a double meaning. Not only what do I, Jay, in my adult life, there's a part of myself that should still be childlike, playful, etc., and I'm worried about them, but also focusing in your dream, going back over yourself when you were that age and you know, where was the love that they didn't get? Where was the Did my confidence and my ability to hold my head up, was it all a little bit murky because of what happened there and then?
Mm. Yeah.
But are there other children in your extended family that are about that age at the moment, or is it just Ree's children?
In my close family, I would say there are maybe one other kid that's coming to mind that's around about the same age.
Right, so the dream arguably might have put that child in rather than Ree's child in, so we will continue to explore why it was Ree's children in there. In real life, in waking life, is Ree, how would you describe Ree in, like, if you picked three words for her personality or approach to life, what would you say?
She is funny, very thoughtful, but she seems to be just confused.
Confused, yeah. Mm-hmm. What would you imagine she's confused about, like everything or how to be in the world or direction or?
I think mostly her confusion comes from trying to figure out what she wants to do with her life,
yeah,
and how she can support herself doing that without relying on outside help.
Right, okay. So some of those things that you said there reflect through the dream with yourself, you, the main character in the dream, that didn't have support at one stage. And if we take this neck thing forward, you know, what you said about how you associate the neck, holding your head high and confidence and stepping out into the world and doing what you want to do, you've got Ree down there as confused about what she wants to do and getting support. So there's some sort of crossover there. So it may be that your dreamy mind thought, ooh, Ree's a good person to have in my dream to kind of represent this part of myself that is a bit confused about how to step forward, how to get support, how to get the confidence to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. This may also, dreaming mind may also have picked Ree because you may be funny and very thoughtful as well, but we'll just focus on the tough stuff for the moment.
Yeah, it's so crazy because when I was talking about her, I was like, oh my gosh, that's me. And I didn't think me and her had much in common.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because you may not have much in common, but again, when we're talking about our dreams, our unconscious mind does join in and it helps us to see how we perceive other people. You know, mm-hmm. Ree might be very surprised and say, I am not funny. I don't think I'm very thoughtful. And who said I'm confused? It's how we see other people
right.
that we then bring them into our dreams for that part of ourselves. So right at the front of the dream, the very beginning of a dream often states the situation or the issue that the rest of the dream is exploring. So right up front now, from the exploration you and I have just done there, Jay, you've got this dream is about me and not feeling confused about how to go out into the world and do what I want to do and not feeling that I have the support. And the rest of the dream explores that. And the very next thing that happens is you with Ree go to the grandparents' house, to the place where you grew up. So straight away, your dreaming brain is going, look, this goes back a long way. You know, the 1 or 2 days before the dream was probably a situation which would have triggered the dream, where you felt this a lot, this confusion, this not knowing how to hold your head up, the lack of confidence, all of that would have come up big time in the day or two before the dream. But then the dream was going, look, this goes back a long way. This goes back to where you grew up. Let's go back in time to find out the roots of this issue.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Actually, this week was the week that classes started back. And so I was just under a lot of pressure for that.
Yeah, like preparing and getting ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. So the first thing that happens when you did go back to where you grew up was you were with Al in the car. So would you like to do the same for Al and without using your head, without thinking about it, give the three words that you would use to describe Al?
He's reserved. He's kind of like stoic. He doesn't show too many expressions.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a hard worker.
A hard worker, yeah. So, but Al was the one that lost it and shouted in the dream, wasn't he? He was really angry.
Mm-hmm.
And you were so shocked at his anger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it doesn't show emotions.
Like no.
Blown up like that.
No. So reserved, stoic, and a hard worker, does that describe you very well?
Maybe to some people, I would think that, yeah. Like, I think maybe the persona that I show.
Yes.
May definitely come off as like she's reserved. I don't know about stoic as much, but I think a lot of people would say that I'm a hard worker.
Mm. Do you feel you work too hard?
I feel that I do.
Mm.
Yes.
And why do you work so hard?
I feel that I'm working hard because of my job. It's one of those jobs that you don't just clock in or clock out, or like there's no end to the workday. Work just continues on and on.
Yeah.
Whenever you get to it. But I also feel like I'm putting in double the work. Like it feels harder because I'm not quite sure it's what I want to do. Like it's so hard for me.
You're not sure that you want to do this because it's so hard, or you're working twice as hard because you're trying to prove to yourself that you're good at the job?
The latter,
but right.
I'm working harder on this job because I don't have the excitement, the energy, the passion around it. So everything that I'm doing just feels like twice as much work, and I feel that I have to do more than I would normally do just to come across as, you know, well-prepared or to make sure I am doing this job well.
Absolutely. I completely understand what you're saying. That's very tough, Jay. That's really, really tough. And so that makes a lot of sense, again, of holding your head up high and really I'm going to persevere through this and I'm going to do it and I've got to work twice as hard so that everybody sees me as the role that I would like them to see me in and as the hard worker that you know, achieves what I need to do. And yet deep down inside, there's a part of you that's saying, this isn't what I really want to do. No. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure everybody listening in here can feel it as I can feel at the moment. This is the tension in the neck as I'm in the wrong place for choices that I've made. You know, I'm not saying you're in the wrong place. I'm saying that one might feel that I'm in the wrong place. You know, maybe I should be somewhere working where I'm not feeling that I'm working so hard, or maybe there's a way to be in this current job I've got in a better place. In other words, doing exactly the same job but not working twice as hard at it. And when we kind of feel the energy, what I really was reaching out to say there was I can feel that in my neck, that sense of that's where you kind of tense it up and get on with it anyway. So the fact that you see Al as reserved, stoic and a hard worker, and his anger really blows in the dream and you're so shocked, suggests that that's your unconscious mind going, I actually have all this anger and I'm shocked that I had it, but I do have it. And at the moment, it's blowing in my dream, like it's like a safety valve. It's out in my dream. I can wake up in the morning with the sense of relief that you had and go, right, that nobody got my anger there. I didn't get my anger there. Maybe my neck got my anger, but I didn't. I held it in. I got like a pressure cooker. I let some of the pressure off in my dream, but it's gonna come up again. But I liked the sense of shock that you reported in the dream there, Jay, because it says to me that in that dream a month ago, it was the first time that you really were shocked about how much anger that you do actually have, that you may not have really noticed until that point that you had so much emotion about the situation you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, I think it does. Are you saying that this came out in the dream, or would I have noticed this in my waking life?
It came out in the dream at the moment, but it's possible because you had an intense sense of shock that you may have over the next week or so began to realize, actually, I have got a bit of anger going on there. Either you did or it got locked up in your neck. I'd say you might have began to notice it, because the strong emotions in our dreams, it usually takes, because they're deeply unconscious to begin with or repressed, it usually takes a few days before it really filters through into your waking consciousness, unless you're working. If you're working solidly with your dreams, you get it when you wake up in the morning and look at your dream.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Do you feel... Yeah, go on.
Some anger or irritation or... I don't know if rage would be the right word, but yes, I did notice just feeling just very irritable.
Yeah.
Since the dream.
And that would, you're left then with, how do I handle this? What do I do with it now that you know about it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. How have you handled it?
I don't know, trying to interpret my dreams to see what it means.
Good.
I've tried working on like journaling, of course, and trying to release certain emotions that I may have bottled up. This is actually what you're saying is dovetailing really beautifully, and almost like it's layering neatly on top of some of the things that I have been journaling and some of the things that have come out in that process, which, you know, begins with your childhood and realizing that a lot of the emotions that you're carrying, somehow they're rooted in, for me, I realized it was rooted in feeling abandoned or rejected.
Yes. Yes. That's so good that you can see that dovetailing, as you say, and also that you're doing the journaling as well. Because the more that you go through that process of acknowledging that the emotions are there and acknowledging how deeply rooted they are, the closer you get to working with those, to releasing them, to being able to unhook yourself from all the beliefs and the mindset that are attached with that, and be freer to, for example, just plucking one of the many things out of the air, to choose to continue to do the job that you do without working twice as hard, or to pick another one out of the air, to change career completely, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So yes, that programming, that release. There was all that stuff about money in the dream too, about right quite early on, about Reese, about whether she was being paid money or not. I wrote down dollars there, and then later on there was a reference to money, where she was going to rob the store for money. So money kept coming up. Now, money may or may not in a dream be a symbol for self-value and, you know, how you value yourself. But it may also, in the context, I guess, of you mentioning your work, be tied up with that. You know, I, Jay, feel that I earn, this is, you know, my career is where I earn my money. So if I don't work as hard on that same job, or if I change job, what does that mean for me financially? So that dollar fee going through there may be an exploration of you and money, but it may also be an exploration of you and value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say that it wasn't until I look back over this dream to prepare to read it to you that I realized how many situations or circumstances were about money, like from the arguing with the grandfather to the wallet being stolen till to the Bentleys, to the, at the end, the robbing of a store. I did not, in my dream, or after I woke up from the dream, I did not think about the money part of it or really, you know, put it all together. But now I'm realizing that it's heavily flowing throughout the dream.
Yes, that's one of the big values of writing down a dream, isn't it? Because we can wake up with the sense of, say, relief that you had, maybe the memory of the anger, maybe the memory of the dog. But it's not till you write out all the dream details that you begin to see where the repetitions are, you know. And the word, or one of the words for that, is in dream work, is a motif. So you've got a recurring motif around money, as you say there. So, you know, it could fit into either of those things, but. Even if you're talking about money as in how much I earn, or what I would earn if I left this job or whatever, if I didn't work as hard, money is often also tied to a sense of self-value, which makes sense of everything that you've said. The Bentleys, talk to me about the Bentleys, what they represent to you, because you included them there in the sense of money, and that was the sense that I got when you said the dream. But Bentleys, talk to me about Bentleys.
I guess I just see them as really fancy cars that only, first of all, I think that people who are in Bentleys are always being chauffeured around. Like, I never think that in the fancy Bentley that I saw, that this person, whoever owned it, would be driving themselves around. Other thing that I think of as it, they were white Bentleys. I don't know if that makes a difference, but they were all white Bentleys, and they were Bentleys for a funeral home.
Yes.
And that is the part that I wasn't sure about, like, why. I mean, I can understand, like, there are a lot of funeral homes that have, like, really nice limousines and you know, cars and things like that to transport people in. But I asked, or my cousin asked me, like, do I think that the B is for the Bentley or the funeral home? And I don't even remember what the funeral home was called, but we seem to be confused about what the B represented.
What does a B represent to you?
The letter?
Yes.
My mother's first name begins with a B, and we also, that's just her nickname as well.
Yeah. Your adoptive mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there may be something around that as well. I related them to the funeral home because, as you said, you was confusion in the dream as to whether they related to the funeral home and the fact that they were white. So there was no fear around the funeral home in the dream. Well, so what did you feel about the funeral home in the dream?
I didn't feel any particular way that I knew of. I think the first time, from remembering the dream, the first time that I looked across the street, I remember seeing a storefront. And then the next time I looked, it was a funeral home there. And I just don't know if the funeral home became the storefront and shapeshifted. Or what? I just knew that there was a funeral home next in my dream that I somehow associated the Bentleys with, because there were some other Bentleys parked in front of it.
Yes. Okay, so that's beautiful. So that funeral scene in the dream followed the dog scene in the dream where you got bitten, the snapping of the neck and that pain in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then straight up after that comes the funeral, the rich funeral scene, fancy funeral, the bee funeral. So a funeral in a dream can sometimes be, a sense of obviously putting something to rest in a very fancy and grand way, potentially here. Although there was, and it could be putting to rest the pain, you know, the immediate bit prior to that, the dream was. So if we go very superficially through the beginning of the dream to lead up to this, sorry. Dream begins, I'm confused about what to do next, how to hold my head up high. I realise I'm worked twice as hard as I need to try to hold my head up really high. I'm actually really angry about this. I didn't realise how much anger about it. I'm shocked. I'm absolutely shocked. There was a do not plagiarise note there, which just I'm just going to put in here, maybe a don't play the role, you know, don't pull on, don't don't copy a role, which is what you said you're doing at work. Really, I'm being standing in the role of whatever it is that you do, rather than feeling it from my heart. You then get the pain in the neck from the dog and all that feeling there of the tension and the snapping, and this has actually given me a pain in my hand. And then we have the fancy funeral home. So it's almost like I'm ready to put that underlying anger and the pain and everything. Maybe I'm ready to let that rest in peace, to let that go.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I value myself so highly in letting that go that I'm looking at Bentleys for the funeral, not just any plain old white limousine. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm fine with going out in style.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. No, obviously, because the dream show has a limited duration, we're going to have to tie up within the next 5 minutes or so, more like or so. So we won't be able to do every part of the dream. But straight after that funeral bit, which was like, I'm ready to put this at rest, we then have the scene which reminded me of a movie, you know, the store, is Ree going to rob the store, you know, and one person gets out and has the gun, Brian gets out, he has the phone, Al has another device, and Jan comes along as a kind of goofy, clumsy character. It was almost like a movie, like, we're going to rob a bank, not a store here, now how are we going to do this? Are we going to get it all goofed up and clumsy? Are we, you know, and so on and so forth. So it was kind of, while it was deadly serious, it was also quite funny. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it did become very, very worrying because you had the bullets being sprayed up and down the street, and the worry about the bullet coming through the screen at the eldest daughter. So if you think of that Ree spraying everyone with her gun and all the bullets up and down the street, it's a little bit like Al spraying his anger in the dream, you know, that it's all coming out here, the anger. And to me, the bullets that Ree is putting out, they're similar. It's like, it's all coming out now. And it's in danger of hurting the young girl in the dream, who may be the part of yourself that when she was adopted, maybe be facing that anger in front of her. You know, so that anger, I guess what I'm trying to paint a picture of here is that sense of the funeral and the dream, the sense of I'm ready to put this at rest. We don't put something at rest, as you know fine well, by putting it in a coffin and burying it under the ground. We put something at rest by getting it all out. Okay, what have we got here? We've got anger, we've got this, we've got that. Let's get it all out, see it for what it is, let it go. That's the rest in peace. And so in the dream, you've got that sense of, you know, Brian with his phone, Ree with her gun, you know, all these people. This is you getting it all out now. And all the spraying with guns up and down the street, although it was Ree in the dream, Ree remembers the part of yourself that you have identified as confused about what to do next or how to do it or having confidence. That part of yourself is just getting it right out of your system. Mm-hmm. And the child faces this through the screen. Although she is safe, she's not hurt, she faces this. So at some level, you're going right back to the age you were when you were around the time when you were adopted out. That was probably then when you had your first anger that was repressed, because little girls should not express things like that and should go along with a plan. So in the dream, that part of yourself is facing all this anger that's been pent up, all these bullets. So what I'm saying here is that, like, even though it was a horrible dream to experience while you were in it, though you had relief when you woke up, it was actually a really good dream to have, because it was really letting all this stuff fly, and that younger part of yourself being able to see that. You then, after that, go into the whole bit in the dream about the witnesses and the police and who was supporting you. And I think Brian trying to side at one point and say, you know, paint you as bad, but then saying, oh, no, actually, she wasn't anything to do with that. They got the whole thing there of, am I guilty?
Uh-huh.
What have I done? Which is, you know, partly, I guess, you may be thinking, how bad would I feel if I let people really show my anger? But also maybe going right back to when you were a child. I don't know, I'm just suggesting this, I may be wrong, but maybe going back to when you were a child and thinking, if I speak out that I'm angry, am I guilty? Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? You know, mm-hmm. Do you go to jail for that? Do I have to be a good girl? not knowing what to do and not feeling, even though you had, from what I'm picking up, a beautifully adoptive mother, still feeling that there was another kind of support that you weren't getting that you needed. How is this sounding so far?
I think you're right on. You're right on.
We have a ghost in the dream, Jay, who's, you questioned through the dream, is that a ghost? Who's your aunt that had passed? Sometimes we can perceive a ghost in a dream when it's like the ghost of an old belief or a ghost of an event that is still, or a ghost of an emotion that's still got a hold on us. But in this case, because you actually knew that your aunt had recently passed, that may be a more logical part of yourself in the dream saying, oh no, hang on a minute, no, she's not dead, that must have been a ghost. But there may be something around there. What would your three words for that aunt be?
I didn't really know her that or talk to her that much, but I would say that she's definitely very stern when she needs to be. She's very, like, just as a woman, fierce.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of speaking her mind, and I would say she is a little closed off. Not a little, a lot closed off. You don't really know.
Yeah. So that's an interesting character, because usually someone that speaks their mind is rather more open, but she's actually closed off and stern. So that mind she might have been speaking might not have been her own mind, might have been an opinionated mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the sense that she's a ghost in the dream, there may or may not be, because we've had the funeral in the dream before that too, may have been the ghost of Jay's past, your past. You know, the ghost of my past is that maybe sometimes I have been not as bad as the aunt, but a little bit closed off because I don't want the anger to show, a little bit stern because I'm trying to keep my neck really stiff here and trying to hold my head up high. But she's becoming a ghost in the dream. It's like that part of myself, I'm actually in this dream beginning to let go of. I can see an end to this. So I'm just having a quick look, because we've only got a couple of minutes to go. I'm just having a quick look through my notes for the last bit of this dream. And I note your mother. We get the first mention of your mother here. Is it your mother? I've written down mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is that your adoptive mother there?
Yes.
Yes. Now, what did she do in the dream? Because I can't read my writing at that point.
the first time she appears is when, after the shooting, at first I was on the phone with my father, and then after walking past the bystanders and the police, I'm now on the phone with her explaining what happened. And that's when I see my aunt who recently passed.
All right. Yes. Yeah. So, yes. So that makes sense then. Have you got, a good relationship with your mum?
Yes.
Mm. So using her as a conduit to work all this out. So at the end, there's the whole thing about Rhea's in jail. But nobody, Rhea's sister at least, is not shocked, is cool and calm about this. And that's when you then check in on the kids to see if they're getting enough nourishment. So we've got that sense there, returning to that theme in the dream, am I Jay nourishing myself properly?
Mm-hmm.
And it ends, I'm not so sure about why Rhea's in the jail there, because my understanding of the dream would be that we would have Rhea out of jail at the stage, you know, that we've released that aspect of yourself. So I'm not sure why she's still in jail. We might have to work on that bit. There's a part of yourself that has locked her up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather than lock up an aspect of our personality, it's better to transform it and free it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end, you've got your sister holding the, you've got Brian says you are telling the truth. So you've got support there. And then the chiropractor's neck comes in and you're annoyed at that point when your sister uses the chiropractor neck gun. You're annoyed, aren't you?
Yes. And it's my cousin.
Your cousin. Yeah.
Yeah. She uses this neck gun.
All right. Okay. Your cousin. So using the gun released annoyance. I know the annoyance was because the gun was used, but it's like, We can get really annoyed when we have to give up our anger and stop hiding it anymore. I was trying to hold on to that. Don't fix my neck. I don't want to fix my neck. So there's all that going on there. So I my only thing about the dream was I would like to see Rhi out of jail at the end, because if Rhi is the part of yourself that is confused and about what to do next and how to step forward and hold her head up high, it's not going to do her much good being in jail. She needs to be out free and thinking and moving in a different way. Mm-hmm. Because it's a long, complex dream and we haven't been able to go into everything, it's been more like the dramas of the dream have been like a recurring theme presented in different ways. So before sort of moving on to a dream alchemy, what stands out for you of what we've discussed, or what stands out for you as what you've learned from this dream today?
I did not realize that the two kids were my younger self, my child self. I wasn't quite sure, even though I know that a dream is supposed to, everybody in the dream symbolizes a part of you. I didn't really realize how much a lot of what she was doing was correlated to how I feel in my life when I'm repressing it. So I would say the two young daughters, and then you mentioned self-value in terms of money.
Yes.
I think for me, that is the biggest thing I'm always trying to work on, valuing myself and what I want more than what anyone else says, or regardless of their opinions, I'm doing what I want to do, or what I feel is, you know, something that I want to do. So I would say those moments are the major moments for me.
That's fantastic. Okay, so also when you listen to this later, when the show comes out, you'll hear all sorts of other things in there as well. But I'm really pleased those are the main things. So we want to work on with the dream alchemy. We want to find a way to work on your self-value and onto maybe giving the young children in the dream aspect of yourself a sense of self-value and a sense of being supported. Would that be right?
And nourishment, yeah.
And nourishment, yeah. Of course, the nourishment of all levels. So, okay. So I think, do you enjoy writing?
I do. I do. In terms of me, like, expressing myself?
Okay. So I would give you a writing dream alchemy exercise to do. And I'd make it a single page story written for a child, not written for any child, written for you when you were about 4 or 5 or 6. And if you find that a bit tough, write it for the little girl in the dream, one of the two daughters in the dream that's about that age. Okay. In fact, you may find it easier to write for her. And it's a story about, and I just as a tip, if anybody dreams of their younger self that needs a lot of help and attention, I will often set this type of dream alchemy practice for this, where you write a story for that child. Because in writing the story, you're writing a story for that aspect of yourself. And then the story has an element of transformation in it. So it's essentially like going back to your younger self and doing a transformation, doing a healing. So I'd like you to write a one-page story. Now, if you want to write more than one page, feel free. But one page kind of makes it feel easier. So it's a one-page story for yourself at that age or the two daughters in the dream. So you write it in the sense that a child's story would be written, but it doesn't have to be professional, it doesn't have to be brilliant, it just has to have a lovely message. And the message is that it's all about the little girl that has is going to go on an exciting adventure. And so she has to have the right nourishment. So then you pick, maybe she has a food nourishment, an ice cream, I don't know what it is, something like that. You give her an emotional nourishment, maybe a big hug, I don't know. You give her a mental nourishment, you would be able to work out what that is. And maybe you give her a spiritual nourishment as well, if you wish. So you give her, in child storytelling, suitable for 4, 5, 6-year-old level, you give her the 3 or the 4 nourishments to take with her as she goes on a journey. And the last thing in the story is how she steps out on the journey, and she has either money or the or the equivalent of that for a child, you know, a bag of beautiful shining jewels or something that represents the self-value side of it. And then she steps out for her adventure and she particularly notices how high her head feels, how, you know, something playing around with the fact of feeling really comfortable and confident stepping out into the world. So I'm not saying too much because I don't want to tell you what the story is for you to write. I want you to write it not with your head, not sitting down for like 3 days trying to write a perfect story. I want you to write it more stream of consciousness. So it's written quickly. So your unconscious mind is joining in. And the essential facts are that they have four different elements of nourishment, that they have a pocket full of self-esteem in the shape of money, jewels, whatever, and that the transformation that occurs is that this child steps out the opposite to Re, fully confident, head held high, not holding your head high in a, I'm playing this role, I'm plagiarizing, I'm working really hard, not that kind of, but I'm holding my head high because I feel really good about myself and I know what I'm doing and I feel really great to have chosen this adventure, that kind of story. Does that make sense and can you do that?
Yes, I can. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Okay, that's really lovely. Do that as soon as you can, even though I know it's probably very late where you are at the moment. If you can even get a start on it, or draw a couple of pictures of it before you go to sleep. And if not, do it tomorrow. And then when you've done it, Jay, read it out as if you're reading it to those kids. Read it out to yourself in the mirror and watch your reactions. And if you're kind of really pleased with it, actually read it out to some kids as well. And the more you read it out, the more you're actually doing that dream alchemy, reprogramming that part of yourself.
Gotcha.
Okay.
That sounds great.
Thanks for being a fabulous guest on The Dream Show, Jay.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure.
So there we go. Now, after we recorded that section that you've just listened to, I had Jay on the phone or on Skype for another couple of minutes, as we always do. We always have a little chat afterwards. And she asked for clarification on that dream alchemy writing exercise I gave. So I'll just give it again here so that everybody listening in. When I say write a one-page story for a 4 to 5-year-old child, I actually mean like one page of adult writing. Obviously, the 4 to 5-year-old child would normally read a story with maybe a sentence or a few words on each page. So it would be lots of pages to create the story for a child. But in terms of actually doing the dream alchemy practice, we probably use one sheet of paper if you're writing by hand, or, you know, if you're typing and printing out, probably one piece of paper on the screen. So I hope that clarifies that, because I'm particularly clarifying it because it is a kind of dream alchemy practice, as I said in the recording, that I like to give if your dreams suggest that it's a good idea to go back and help transform an element of your childhood. So that's that. One of the other things I wanted to remind everybody, obviously you're listening to The Dream Show somewhere. You might be listening to it through my website at janetheresa.com. You might be listening to it on any number of platforms. But for those of you who may be on one and don't know about another, you can listen to it on Spotify, on Apple, on Stitcher, most other places that you go to listen to your podcast. And you can listen to every single one of them at janetheresa.com. Do share the link to the Dream Show. If you're enjoying it, then people that you know will enjoy it too. Do please help out and go and give us some good star ratings and some reviews. That helps a lot as well. If you need to contact me for to do a consultation with me, go to janetheresa.com. If you're interested in doing courses and you want to start right now, you can go to dream-academy-online.com, because all the courses there, as soon as you've paid, you get access right now and you can begin. And I think that's everything that I need to say for what's turned out to be a long and exciting episode. The next episode of The Dream Show, if you're listening to this in real time, is episode 278, and it goes out on the 26th of March, 2020. Have a wonderful month. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.